Hello, this is Lucia. Welcome to Race Reflections at Work, the podcast that focuses on inequality, injustice, and oppression in the workplace. In this episode, we will discuss whiteness in psychotherapy and mental health, what it is, and how it can affect therapeutic work and how we view it. So essentially, this is for anyone either working or wanting to work in the mental health professions, and also for people currently using mental health services or going to therapy in private practice or actually looking to start that. Here at Race Reflections, part of our expertise is on topics of inequalities and injustice, but also on psychology and mental health. We have developed a full course on this topic, and this podcast will be based on that material. As you may know, our founder, Guylaine Kinwani, is a psychologist and a group analyst. And myself, just for a bit of background too, I'm an assistant disruptor here at Race Reflections, but I'm also a trained psychotherapist working part-time in private practice. A lot of this material also comes from what I've seen while training and working on this field. Before we get into it, if you want to send us any of your queries, questions, and dilemmas, please email at work@racereflections.co.uk. So in this episode, then, we will be exploring the current issues in the profession. And in the end, we will also go over some ideas, some tips for people who may be looking for therapists or maybe looking into assessing if their therapist is a good match for them. This is particularly important, I believe, since there's very little information out there for people to know what to look for and to know if they are having a good therapeutic experience or to assess for harm until it is too late frequently. So as I previously said, we do have a full-on course called Whiteness in Psychotherapy, delivered as an e-learning module. So let me talk a little bit about that and especially the rationale behind it and why we consider it's needed. So it is important to know there are some things that are seldom talked about really when we talk about mental health, when we talk about therapy. And this is important to know for everyone, whether you are a therapist looking into becoming one or looking for therapy yourself as a client or a service user. So first of all, in the great majority of courses to become therapists, there is either no training or very little training in working with difference. Notably, I'm speaking about difference that is related to different axes of oppression, right? So cultural difference, racial difference, neurodiversity, etc. So some are more talked about than others. For example, gender is mentioned quite a few times, but racial difference, for example, is very, very seldom talked about, explored, or mentioned during training. We do have some modules when we are going through training about diversity. Therapists adore this word, similarities and differences. I have found those are quite superficial. We are not asked to go too much into detail or to dig very deep about what those differences might mean and the social context and the historical context of those differences and whatever hierarchy we might be looking at socially speaking. I've found that usually trainers are not prepared to go that deep either. They're usually just superficial sessions that are aimed to just make us reflect, you know, asking us about our different perspectives on different kinds of difference and explore very lightly how we might feel about it in the therapy room, for example, and then you will be left at that. At no point, and this is a huge issue in my opinion, we are actually confronted with naming realities of oppression and discrimination. And we don't draw links on those social realities and how they could be affecting people's lives and particularly their mental health. And that's obviously, as therapists, how we can encounter those issues in the therapy room and how to support people through that. So that's not spelled out, that's not named, or very lightly named. So I do believe that we come out of those trainings, if we haven't done all the research and all the training on our end by ourselves, then we are completely unprepared to do that. And on top of it, if you've been in therapy, you might understand this, that there's this notion of separation between what happens outside of the therapy room and the exclusivity of the therapy space as a safe space where, you know, there's very, very special relationship. A lot of the time, there's a little bit of reticence to actually acknowledge that a lot of the social, structural dynamics, especially relating to inequality and oppression, also influence relationships within therapy rooms. So we are not separated from the context. And it is important to consider how unconscious material that might be out there, you know, in exclusionary, discriminatory dynamics, might also be in there in the therapy room, in the therapeutic relationship. One last point I'd like to make about the inadequacy of training and what we are not supported in learning during our training as mental health professionals is that at no point there's an expectation for trainees, especially trainees that come from very privileged backgrounds, either because they're white or middle class or any other kind of privilege, to examine our own identities and to name those identities and to think deeply about how or what would those identity mean in the world, in society, and in the therapeutic relationship. For example, what it means to be white as a therapist, perhaps in front of another white person as a client or a client of color, and what the impact of that can be on the work. So might be a deeply uncomfortable examination, but a very needed one to prevent harm. And the point I want to make is that we are not made to do that work, which would be very important during our training. So to respond to this, I believe that, like in many different disciplines, right, to redress the wrongs or what's lacking and to find ways of working in an anti-racist or an anti-oppressive way first requires us to start by understanding and pointing out what the issues are and what the gaps are, to make visible those problems, make visible what's been invisibilized, unsaid, unnamed, and to problematize what is at this time considered normal in the mental health profession, at least in mainstream thinking. And obviously the case, as I said, for mental health is no different. So that's what we start by doing in our course. We start with an overview of how the history and colonial culture of whiteness and white supremacy have shaped our profession in the form of shaping the cultural assumptions that are the underlying basis of our theories and practices since their inception. We also go over how racism and cultural assumptions make our practice only cater to one specific group, you know, the majority group, at least in this country, white, middle class, able-bodied, cishet, for example. And it sets our perspectives on life and what is considered normal, what is considered healthy, what is considered well-being. And those concepts are defined by these underlying cultural assumptions that are very Western and very white. And there's a tendency to pathologize or problematize everything that might seem different from those norms, those concepts of health, of mental health, of well-being. So we'll see that more in detail in the course, but it is important to point out for everyone to know that the psychological professions, as the medical professions, have a very long history of violence by pathologizing difference, by interpreting people's experiences and issues through its own frame of reference, as I said, that is white and Western. And we can even argue that for a long time, the unsaid or unnamed purpose of psychology, psychiatry, and therapy and treatment was to actually make people conform to society's norms, or at least to conform or to cope with their difficult realities, to cope with oppression in order not to create too many waves, too many problems. And one of the biggest examples we can cite for that is the diagnosis of mental illnesses such as drapetomania or rascality, which were actual diagnoses that existed. They were about diagnosing enslaved people that would repeatedly try to escape their situation. And they were diagnosed as mental illness because from this very white, very Western perspective, that wasn't a normal thing that would conform to, you know, the hierarchy in society. So it wasn't normal that people wouldn't want to stay in a situation of enslavement, despite, you know, it being for their own good or something ridiculous like that. But those are our old diagnoses, very violent ones. They were responded to with physical violence as some sort of quote-unquote treatment or cure. But those assumptions are still actually present today when we look at difference in how people of color and especially Black people are treated in the mental health field, in the services. For example, more heavy diagnosis given to Black people, or them being treated for things like paranoia when they're actually just not able to trust the services, the medical profession, understandably so, because of the history of violence and of exclusion and lack of care that that community has endured from psychological and medical profession. So instead of understanding that, professionals are looking at that and labeling that as a mental illness, as paranoia. And this is just one example out of many of how all these historical violent perspectives that we find in psychology, psychiatry, and psychotherapy are still present as an underlying assumption in our theories, in our practices. So we need to be very aware of that, and we need to examine our way of working, our way of thinking in light of that. So this is how we end up working with mental health professionals or therapists, not considering their own practices and theories as profoundly rooted in white supremacy or a history of violence like this. They end up doing harm to service users and clients. I would say in the worst case scenario is quite harmful, is very re-traumatizing for people, and sometimes it's very difficult to know what's going on, and at best is just a limitation in the service, actually, and how deep a person that needs to be supported in a situation of marginalization or needs to talk about, for example, how the racism they've endured has affected them, then they find out that they can't do that in therapy because the therapist is not trained for that, is not prepared for that, and minimizes the reality or just denies the reality. So there's a level of care and level of service that is very limited. And that, as I said, is the best case scenario, because at other times there's very direct and very violent harm that can happen within a therapy room. So obviously a podcast on this or a course on this would not be completely helpful if it's here only to point out at the problem, right, without offering some keys to start reflecting on some solutions and to start changing. Understanding in which ways whiteness can be a barrier to this development can also help in understanding how to start working through it. For example, some perspectives and consideration on shame and guilt as part of this self-development process. They're present in the course. So shame and guilt can be a barrier to development, you know, especially for white therapists. But it can also be a way of helping and motivation. We also explore something that is seldom considered in this type of training, which is ambivalence and the presence of transference and counter-transference, and in the ways in which whiteness can be a barrier to working ethically and also to get through this process of developing an anti-racist and anti-oppressive practice as a professional. Finally, our course points out, and this is very helpful to be saying in the podcast too, to some frameworks that already exist to work within this reality in a more ethical way. So we point out to those frameworks that already exist because it's not the point to reinvent the wheel, right? Many frameworks already exist and they're quite well developed. They're just not very well known or explored in our trainings. So for example, if we have a cross-racial dyad in the therapeutic room, some frameworks consider what we need to explore and reflect for it to be safe and ethical, either in supervision or our own personal development, to be able to hold a client safely and ethically. And with a bit of a focus on what a white professional specifically might need to start that journey too. So taking into consideration, and I would say as a client, if you are a client, you can also take that into consideration, the difference, you know, that might come from working with a white professional or a professional of color. Often because whiteness has been normalized, has been placed at the center of our theories and our practices, white professionals haven't been taught how to reflect on that, on their own racial identity and how it may affect the work. So there's a process to go through to achieve that. So thinking about our racial identity, as described by Janet Helms, for example, and other authors that take her framework and use it to talk about therapeutic training more in detail and how to support trainees through this. There are other frameworks also that exist that explain working with race-based stress in the therapy room and racial trauma and how to support people through those issues. Now, this course and this podcast's main focus is not specifically the work with racial trauma, but the material aims to provide an introduction to that subject, notably including perspectives and existing frameworks that incorporates the social context into the work, not only talking about the therapeutic dyad. So those frameworks incorporate social context. It is important to know that the social context is important in every aspect of the work. So we're talking about the beginning, the assessment, and case formulation, and also actively in the healing process of the person. As you may know by now, here at Race Reflections, we work with issues of racism as a system at all levels. So we don't only consider the individual and interpersonal components of racism, but also the organizational, the structural level of racism and oppression. So I do believe this is very important to incorporate too in the therapeutic provision, whatever the environment of that work is, if it's within a mental health service or in private practice. There's something really important about working with the social reality of the person and the social context. Lastly, before I leave you, I'd like just to discuss therapeutic relationships from the point of view of the client. So I'd like to give some perhaps pointers for reflection and some tips if you are wondering about going into therapy with a professional, or if you are already in therapy and you might be wondering if the service that you're having is, you know, fit for purpose, if you feel well, how do you assess that, really? So let's start with that. How do you assess that if you are already in therapy and you'd like to bring something related to oppression to your therapist and you wonder if that's okay and if it will be okay? The first thing I would say is trust your gut. You know yourself and you know your therapeutic work more than anyone, even more than your own therapist, because you are the one that holds the key of your experience. You know, is your gut telling you that you can bring those things to your therapist, those subjects to explore and discuss? How comfortable do you feel when thinking about that? Do you feel in other cases that you could bring all of yourself, all aspects of yourself, your identities, your reactions spontaneously, and were they all met with the same acceptance and the same curiosity from your therapist? Or did you notice a little bit of a difference in certain cases? If that's the case, then what were the topics or the reactions or the aspects of yourself that you felt you couldn't bring or that were met with, you know, a different reaction from your therapist? Why might that be? And how would you expect your therapist to respond if you bring that in again? Or imagine how your therapist would respond if you were to bring that in the therapeutic room. You might want to think, and you don't have to be a therapist yourself to know this, you know, you don't have to thinking in theoretical terms, just for yourself. How do you think that might be affecting your work, the service you're getting, the outcomes of your therapy? And finally, a really good question to ask yourself periodically, and if you feel able to bring that to your therapist as well. Am I getting everything I can or everything I need from this work? Other things to consider if you are looking for a therapist or you're looking into changing therapists are some things to watch out for too. What a lot of therapists will not tell you, sometimes because we don't consider it, or we might know it, we don't think it's important to say, or we forget sometimes that clients don't come in with the same level of knowledge. And sometimes it's also a defensive thing. But the reality is that it's completely okay for a client to question the work of a therapist. So it's completely okay for you to question your therapist on what they're saying, how they practice, their modality, their reactions, their questions. It's completely okay, and it's, I believe, more ethical for every client to be aware that there are a plethora of different ways of working out there, different modalities, different stances and perspectives, different therapists. Each therapist come with their own lived experience and their own positionality and expertise and ways of thinking and personality. So there's a lot of different ways of working out there that can adapt to anyone's needs. And sometimes it's a question of quality of therapy. Sometimes it's just a question of match. So you might be feeling a little bit uncomfortable that your therapist is perhaps not the right match for you, but there's someone out there that will, and that doesn't mean that that person might be a better or worse therapist. It's just a question of matching personalities, for example. So knowing this, it's important also to know that it is good when you're looking for therapists or when you are looking into that to shop around, right? Shop around for therapists. So that means book initial sessions with different therapists, have initial calls with different therapists that, you know, you like their profile. Don't be afraid to say, listen, I'm having initial sessions with other people. I'll let you know about the outcome. Trust your gut in that process. Trust that, you know, your embodied response with someone. If you feel safe, if you feel okay, if you feel comfortable. Especially if you're in front of someone that is, because of their own positionality, not so likely to understand your experience of marginalization. Now, it doesn't mean that it's impossible to work with that person, but perhaps you want to observe, you know, how open they seem, how comfortable you feel. And if that's the case also, do not be afraid to name things, to tell your therapist or your potential therapist how you're feeling in the moment with them, in the relationship. Ideally, therapists should be able to handle that within themselves and adapt to your needs. Or they should be aware of where their limitation lies, and they should be able to direct you, signpost you to someone who is perhaps better equipped to help you. The other thing that you should not be afraid to name or to question when you are looking for therapists, or if you're already in therapy and you want to touch on this subject, ask directly. Just to give you an example of a question you can ask directly. Do you as a therapist have experience working with people that have been targets of racism or discrimination? Or another question would be, what are your thoughts around systemic oppression, how that affects mental health? What are your thoughts around how people live with disability, for example, et cetera, et cetera? So do not be afraid to ask that directly and then assess how they respond and engage for how you feel about what they're responded. Lastly, if you are still kind of doubting, you know, your therapist or the work or finding someone, perhaps you want to seek other people with similar experiences that have been through therapy, especially if you're unsure about the quality of your therapy and you feel you might not be getting the best you could be getting from the experience, then you might want to speak with other clients or other therapists about that too. People with similar lived experience. And, you know, sometimes just this conversation and this dialogue can help clarify a lot of things. That's also a good way to ask around for recommendations. So there are therapists out there who work in very ethical, very good ways too. And to find them, we can rely on other people's recommendations that have seen them or know them. It is important, I believe, to find someone who will be open to working with us in the way we need to, with all our lived experience and our particularities, especially if we have had a previous negative or harmful experience with mental health professional. We might need also a bit of support in processing those previous harmful experiences. So we have reflected on this episode a little bit on the idea of whiteness in therapy and in mental health. There are, of course, a lot more things to say, and we could expand so much on each of the points I've mentioned. We do that in our online course, and in Race Reflections, we provide sessions to reflect and think together with our members on these issues. So if you are a mental health professional or undergoing therapy and would like some further information on this and reflecting with the group, do consider taking one of our memberships and access our learning spaces, our reflective spaces. I do hope that this has been helpful in some ways and perhaps giving you a little bit of information about the profession, about therapy, and helping you reflect on it in ways that might help you in the future. And I hope that you will continue to think with us on different topics of inequality, injustice, and oppression in the workplace. Please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Lucia from Race Reflection. Take good care of yourself and goodbye.